Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Bio 231 lecture. Today is April 15th. April 15th, stands out in my mind. It's an important date for some reason. I forget what it is. Why is that an important date? Oh, tax day, that's right. Ooh, okay, gotta pay taxes. I pay taxes. No one ever tells me thanks. You pay taxes? Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. All right, so we're going to finish up census chapter, move on to endocrinology. But before we start doing all that, we're going to look at the schedule. So today is the 15th, and we should be getting into heart today, but we probably won't. But we're going to finish up endocrine system because we have to, because next time is lecture exam number 3, right? And it's on 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. The endocrine system does have a study guide, but it does not have a Blackboard assignment week. So there's nothing in Blackboard to help you there. So make sure you look at that study guide, know the end of chapter questions, that kind of thing. And also on Monday, the 20th, the Monday lab will have a practicum. So you'll have a practicum first and then a lecture, or a lecture and then a practicum, depending on what Monday lab you're in. The Wednesday lab, you don't have to take a practicum until Wednesday, but you get a practicum and a lecture test on the very last Wednesday of school, so it kind of evens out a little bit. All right, anybody have a question on the schedule at all, where you should be studying? I think you got that all down by now pretty well. Sign-in sheet is going around, so make sure you sign the sign-in sheet, because the drop date is coming up. Oh, I put the schedule away. The drop date is the 26th. That's a Sunday. If you're going to drop the class for whatever reason, probably nobody will in here now. But if you do, do it on a Saturday. Do it on the 25th, just in case the computer's busy or something's broken down, because after that date, there's just no way that you can drop the class with a W. Then you have to get a grade, no matter what happens. All right, so just think of that. All right, I'll put that away. All right, so let's get started finishing up special senses, and I guess it would be really good to remember what the difference is between a special sense and a general sense. What is a special sense? Why is it special? Oh, yeah, the location of the sensory organ or the sensory cells. If it's a general sense, you have these sensory cells all over your body, so no matter where that stimulus is applied, you'll be able to appreciate it. Like temperature is general, right? We put an ice cube on your kneecap, you can feel it on your earlobe, you can feel it top of your head, you can feel it bottom of your feet, right? You can feel it. And so that is a general sense. A special sense, the sense organs are only in one or two locations in your body. So what are all of the special ones? We've got, let's start from, maybe I'll think in terms of cranial nerves. You got olfactory. You got optic. Oh, well, olfactory is what? Smell, right? Then vision. Then hearing. Okay. Taste, gustation. That's good. And then there's two more. The equilibrium senses. There are two kinds of equilibrium. And that's kind of where we left off. We talked about the one that involves the maculae, which is the utricle and saccule, they're contained within the vestibule. And what kind of equilibrium sense do the maculae give you, or the utricle and saccule? Static equilibrium, yeah, static equilibrium. And what that really means is that you can appreciate a change in velocity in a linear direction. Change in linear direction, velocity. And what do we call that? Change in velocity, not constant velocity. If you're going 100 miles an hour, that's not acceleration, right? So you got to be changing velocity someplace for these receptors to give you information, right? That is static equilibrium for linear velocity. Oh, I like that. Linear acceleration. That's the best way to talk about it. What is really strange about those utricles and saccules that you have? Yeah, you got crystals in your ear, right? They are called otoliths, right? And they just weigh that gelatinous mass down and bend the stereocilia when you accelerate in one direction or another. All right, well, that takes us to kinetic equilibrium. Before we get to this equilibrium, I have this slide up, and it shows the three parts of the year. Let's go over this really fast. What are the three parts of the year? External, which includes the Pina auricle and the external acoustic meatus. Then the next one is the middle ear, which contains a bunch of bones, right? And you got to know the bunch of bones, malleus, incus, and stapes. They transmit sound vibrations from the tympanic membrane over to this membrane over here, which we call the oval window, right? And then the third part is the internal ear. Sometimes this bony structure we call the labyrinth or bony labyrinth, and it's got three pieces as well. It's got the cochlea, which looks like a snail, and that's for, anybody remember what sense this is for, the cochlea? Yeah, for hearing. It's not for equilibrium, but it's for hearing. Then the vestibule, we can just see a little bit of the vestibule right here. That is for, gives you the sense of linear acceleration or static equilibrium. And then the semicircular canals are good for angular acceleration or dynamic equilibrium. All right, so you got dynamic equilibrium, static equilibrium, and hearing, all in that inner ear. Okay, and don't forget about this eustachian tube. What's another name for eustachian tube? Aha. Your throat, we're going to get to that. Your throat is called pharynx. Okay, pharynx is your throat, so I wouldn't really call this a pharynx, but I could name it after the two areas that it connects. It connects the pharynx to this middle ear where there's this tympanic membrane. So sometimes we call it the pharyngo, namely throat, tympanic tube. Pharyngo, tympanic tube. And there's that little O that you can use when you join anatomical words together. Right? So it would be like what? The throat eardrum tube. Throat eardrum tube would be the same thing as pharyngo tympanic tube. Okay. All right, so we need to finish up with this linear acceleration a little bit. Notice that at the base of each of these semicircular canals, there's a little bulge. Do you see this bulge? You notice that in lab. And that reminded somebody of a little glass vial. And I just want to make sure I didn't say the name out loud. What's another name for a little tiny glass vial? An ampule. Yeah, an ampule. And that reminded somebody of a little ampule. And so this is called the ampule of a semicircular canal. And I don't see all of them here, but you got to know how many semicircular canals are there. And probably the reason why is there are three planes that can describe our space, right? So there's what? Anterior, posterior, right, left, superior, inferior. If you know where you are in those three planes, you can describe exactly where you are in space. And so there are three semicircular canals because you could be spinning in each of those different directions. All right, so that's just, again, a little overview of all of the pieces of the ear. Oh, I put it away. No, I didn't want to put it away. Sorry. All right, so let's move on to, oh, which one did I put away? I'm not so sure. The Word file? Okay, well, it wasn't bad, whatever I did. Okay, so here are these crystals, right, for static equilibrium, and that's due to structures inside the vestibule that we call either the utricle or the saccule, and the sensory cell is a hair cell, and these cilia poke up into this gelatinous mass, and when the gelatinous mass moves, because these otoliths are heavy, it will bend these stereocilia, and that will change the electrical properties of this hair cell, and that sends electrical information to the brain that gives you a sense of linear acceleration. Okay, so here are the three semicircular canals. This is the last thing that we have to finish up. And remember, there's fluid inside the cochlea, and there's fluid inside the semicircular canals, and fluid can flow very easily from one place to another, unless it's vitreous humor, that doesn't flow very well. And so it is possible for this fluid to flow in a circle, right, because these are circular type canals. And when fluid flows through these circles, it can bump up against this thing that is in an ampule. This is called the crista ampullaris. Crista ampullaris is the sense organ for dynamic equilibrium. And the crista ampullaris has a couple parts. It has a cupula, which is like a gelatinous mass. and then it has some stereocilia poking up into it. The stereocilia come off, their projections from what kind of cell? What kind of cell do these stereocilia come from? They come from, I know it's strange, they come from hair cells. Where, what other organ do you know of that has hair cells? What are the ones? The utricle and saccule. Here's some hair cells. And what's another one? I don't think I want to go back far enough. But if those hair cells are connected to the tectorial membrane. What sense has a tectorial membrane? I can't hear you. That's a hint. Okay, yeah, hearing. Right, there are hair cells for hearing as well. All right, so when this fluid pushes up against the cupula, it will give you a sense of spinning so that if you do start spinning, you can maintain balance. All right, so that's the job of the crista ampullaris. Do you want like a little example of how that can possibly work here over here? Maybe I can do it. We really need to get the endocrine system, but let's try this. All right, I'm going to turn some lights on. I have my little Coke bottle right here. The reason why the crista ampullaris work just fine is because that fluid is a mass, and mass has a special physical property called inertia. And anybody study inertia? Anybody know what inertia is? We've got to figure out what inertia is first. What does inertia mean? Yeah, when you go someplace fast and stop, whatever it is still likes to keep going. So that's basically what inertia is. Two parts to inertia. It says that if a mass, if something that has mass is stationary, is not moving, then it does not want to move. It wants to remain stationary. Okay. And the opposite, the other kind of thing is true, and that is if there's a mass in motion, it likes to stay in motion. It doesn't like to stop. All right. That's what inertia means. If it's stationary, doesn't want to move, but if it is moving, doesn't want to stop. All right, so here I have my Coke bottle, and I got some pieces of paper right here. And you all probably did this little experiment over Easter weekend. Maybe you had some people come over to the house, and you had a nice table all set up with plates and wine glasses and candlesticks and silverware and everything. And you went up to everybody and said, you know what, I could remove the tablecloth without disturbing any of the plates or candlesticks or anything on the table because I know these candlesticks and wine glasses have inertia, right? And so what could you do? You could take the tablecloth and just go like that, right? So there was force applied to this Coke bottle, but because it has inertia, what did it want to do? Just stay there. It didn't want to move, right? But I could move the tablecloth very, very easily. All right, what is the other part about inertia? Once you get something in motion, it doesn't like to stop. All right, so let's get this Coke bottle moving, and then I'll stop the paper really fast, and we'll see if the Coke bottle keeps moving. Do you think it will? All right, let's go. Ah, perfect. Right to the edge of the table. All right, so what this means is the following. This Coke bottle is like the endolymph, the fluid inside of our semicircular canals. So if we're standing stationary, what does it want to do? Stay there. But if the crista ampullaris, which is attached to your body, starts spinning, then the fluid that is not spinning will push up against the cupula, and that's going to send electrical information to your brain. All right. And then if you spin for a long period of time, what happens to that endolymph? It catches up to your spinning rate. And then if you stop all of a sudden, what happens to the endolymph? It keeps moving, and it pushes on the cupula the opposite direction, and your mind will have the sensation that you stop spinning in the opposite direction. All right, so that's the job of the semicircular canals. And probably, maybe you've done this, maybe even last weekend. You started spinning, and you spun for maybe 15 or 20 seconds. The endolymph caught up to your spinning, and then you stopped all of a sudden, right? The endolymph in your ears are still spinning, but you're stopped. And what is your perception when you look at the world? It still looks like the world is spinning, right? Even though you're stopped. And the reason why the world looks like it's spinning is because the endolymph hasn't stopped yet, because the endolymph has inertia associated with it. Okay, so that is the last topic that we're going to talk about in this particular chapter. And I'm going to take my Coke back. Okay, inertia. You might have to Google inertia just a little bit. All right, so anybody have any questions on special senses? I don't see any questions. Fantastic. So we're going to move on. And we're going to move into endocrine system. Oh, I like that. I picked the right one. Now what about the word slides? Right here. Okay, endocrine system. Well, let's start with a gland. What does a gland do? What does a gland do? A gland produces some kind of chemical substance, right? And then it secretes it from the cell. So it's, this chemical stuff is built inside of a cell, then the cell secretes it. And as a matter of fact, you know a couple different kinds of glands. General classes, two general classes of glands. They both synthesize something and secrete it. But what are the two general kinds of glands that you're aware of? Endocrine, yeah, we covered endocrine, and an exocrine. An exocrine gland secretes its product into a duct or a tube, and then that tube carries it to wherever its activity should be. For instance, a sweat gland. It produces sweat to cool you down, and the reason why it cools you down is because that sweat is secreted into a tube. The tube carries it to the surface of your body where it evaporates, and that cools you down. All right, so that's an example of an exocrine gland. An endocrine gland, on the other hand, secretes its product not into a tube at all, just into the extracellular space, and then it diffuses into the blood, diffuses through a capillary into the blood, and when it's in the blood, what happens to it? Yeah, it goes everywhere where the blood goes, right? So that's how that product gets distributed, not by a duct, but by the circulatory system. And the name of that product has got a special name. The product that gland secretes into the blood and it goes everywhere is called a hormone. Yeah, so you should have a pretty good definition, working definition of a hormone. So a hormone is secreted by an endocrine gland, travels to a distant location in your body where it will elicit a specific response. It will change the physiology of a cell that can recognize it. How does a cell recognize a hormone that is present? How does your body know that you're in a lighted room or a dark room? What do you have? You have to have receptors, right? Photoreceptors for vision, and for those hormones, they need receptors as well. Okay, but it's not light. It is just by the shape of the molecule. All right, so that's another important thing. That hormone has to bind to a receptor. And that receptor makes that cell or that tissue a target tissue. So a hormone can change the physiology of a target tissue if it has what? A receptor. That's right. And as a matter of fact, that's kind of a funny way of saying it because it can't even be a target tissue unless it has a receptor. Otherwise, that tissue or cell will be completely blind to whatever chemical that is. Okay. So endocrine system is composed of ductless glands that secrete hormones, and these hormones are signaling molecules, right, that can change the physiology of a target tissue. And you know what a target tissue is now, and then that will change the physiology of that cell, or you could say it will elicit a specific response that nothing else can elicit. All right, some of the functions of the endocrine system. Right, it regulates relatively slow processes, not like skeletal muscle contraction, right? Because that's a relatively rapid process. If I want to reach out and get a drink of Coca-Cola, I don't want to wait 30 minutes or whatever for my arm to move out there. Right, nervous system is very fast. The duration of action is relatively slow. The duration goes away very fast. The endocrine system controls things that change over a long period of time. And that long period of time could be hours or days or months. And so that's its job. So it's important for growth. How long does it take you to grow? Long time, years and years and years. As a matter of fact, we grow our whole life. Right? Our noses and ears are going to keep growing even though we don't grow anymore necessarily. Right? Endocrine system regulates metabolism. It regulates basal metabolic rate, how your body uses energy. It regulates the reproductive system. And that's a pretty complicated system. That's the last chapter that we're going to look at in this class. It regulates blood chemistry. What's a compound in your blood that's really important and you need, and as a matter of fact, you're going to learn that you need the endocrine system for it to regulate. What's one compound in your blood? Yeah, you got oxygen, carbon dioxide. These are gases. That's not so important for endocrine system. But I heard a really good example, and that is glucose. Blood glucose. Glucose is a sugar. It's an energy molecule, and it should remain at a relatively constant, relatively level concentration. And the endocrine system helps regulate that, right? And that's important, what, day after day, month after month. And you probably know one hormone already that helps regulate blood glucose concentration. Insulin, that's right. Insulin will decrease blood glucose concentration. So somebody that's not secreting insulin, what happens to their blood glucose? It goes up because one reason might be there's no insulin. And remember, insulin decreases blood glucose. Right, so blood chemistry is important, and even immune response, how your body responds to bacteria and fungi and other kinds of stuff that just doesn't belong in your body. All right, so here are some endocrine organs. This is kind of like the classical list, and if we look at a slide, okay, here's a slide that contains many endocrine glands, but there's even some additional ones. We see that there are some in the brain. Those of you that have lab already, okay, can you tell me an endocrine gland that's in the brain? Okay, you could include pituitary gland. Okay, you could include pineal gland. So these things secrete hormones. Here's a thyroid gland in your anterior neck. Thymus gland, that's important for immune response. These things that look like kidney beans are your kidneys. Indeed, they're your kidneys. And there's an important endocrine gland sitting right on top of them. These are the adrenal glands, which means on top of the renal glands. The pancreas, right, produces digestive enzymes that enter a tube, a duct, and that duct carries it to the small intestine where they digest a bunch of stuff. That would be an example of what kind of gland, if those enzymes get secreted into a duct. That would be what kind of function? What are your two choices, exocrine or endocrine? Digestive enzymes secreted into a duct are the exocrine part of the pancreas, but the pancreas also secretes insulin, so what else can you tell me about the pancreas? It's an endocrine gland as well. It has those two characteristics, both endocrine and exocrine. And it also secretes another hormone, and maybe some others, but another one that is secreted is due to blood glucose concentration. Right, and I'll tell you the name in just a second after you tell me what the function is. All right, so what's the function of insulin in terms of blood glucose? It decreases blood glucose. All right, that other hormone, when I think of that other hormone, I think of the biceps brachii and triceps brachii. What's the relationship of insulin and this other hormone that I haven't talked to you about? They're antagonistic to each other. And that's a wonderful thing, right? That's like having a gas pedal and a brake pedal. That allows for precise control and balance of blood glucose. The name of that hormone is called glucagon. Probably you all have heard of insulin. Has anybody ever heard of glucagon? Yeah, nice. But it's just as important as insulin. All right, here's a couple other glands, like the ovary and testes. These are what we call male and female gonads, okay, or orchids. And they are responsible for producing sex cells like eggs and sperm. And got to come back to the last week of the class before we can talk about that. Oh, here's another one. Hypothalamus. Yeah, that's in the brain as well. Hypothalamus. Can barely see it. Really small on this slide. Here are some other things that typically, unless you study the endocrine system, you wouldn't think of them as endocrine glands. But the heart is an endocrine gland, digestive tract, the kidneys themselves, and even your skin is an endocrine gland. So what does that mean? What does the heart do if it's an endocrine gland? Yeah, it secretes a hormone. And maybe we get to talk about that one. If not, certainly in a physiology class we do. Okay, most of these glands are epithelial in origin. They come from epithelium. That's a class of tissue, right? There's four kinds of classes of tissues. That's just one of them. All right, and since we're talking about classes, let's talk about some classes of hormones. What can some of these signaling compounds be? All right, some of them can be made up of amino acids, and probably know what an amino acid, if we put a bunch of them together, what can it build? Amino acids are a building block of protein. That's right. So some hormones are proteinaceous, some are peptides. They're made of amino acids, and these things like to dissolve in water. All right, so it's easy to get these into the blood because your blood is mostly water. And there's another kind, which we call steroids. And steroid is a fat. It's a lipid. And what can you tell me about lipid and water? Oil and water. Fat and water. They don't mix, right? So your body has to do special things to transport these steroids around because they don't like to dissolve in your blood. But here's something, and they're all derived from cholesterol, so you need to have some cholesterol in your body. That's a good molecule, just not too much, because that can produce cardiovascular disease. All right. Here's the funny thing. If it's a steroid, it can enter a cell. What can you tell me about a cell membrane? What's a basic building block of a cell membrane? Yeah, it's a semipermeable membrane. But what's a building block? Building block of a protein is amino acid. Building block of a membrane, this goes way back months, I'm not sure anybody can remember it. But so I hear it, it's a phospholipid. All right, what's the key term there? Lipid, it's lipid. And what is a steroid? Lipids, so steroids can diffuse right through a cell membrane. So that just means that the receptors for steroids are inside the cell. The receptors for amino acid or water-soluble hormones are outside the cell because they can't get in. They can't get through the cell membrane because it's a lipid, right? Okay, because oil and water don't mix. So there's a big difference whether it's a fat-soluble or water-soluble hormone. All right, so here are some of those glands. Let's talk about the control of secretion. We got three ways that a hormone can be controlled, and they're humoral, neural, and hormonal, right? And humoral just means that there is another chemical, okay? There is another chemical in the blood, in your body that can trigger the secretion of a particular hormone. And here is a pretty good example. All right, here's the thyroid gland. There's some other glands embedded in the thyroid. These are what we call the parathyroid glands, and they secrete parathyroid hormone. And they secrete parathyroid hormone because there's a chemical in the blood that they can monitor, and it will help adjust the level of that chemical. And that chemical is calcium, a calcium ion. And you know calcium is important for bones. What else is calcium important for? Muscle contraction, nerve transmission, synaptic transmission. So that has to be regulated very carefully as well. Parathyroid hormone is secreted from the parathyroid glands when there is low calcium in the blood. And so there are receptors and cells around your bones that start to dissolve bones down too, and then that calcium increases, and that then slows the secretion of parathyroid hormone. So that is humoral. The humor there is calcium. That's the substance that can trigger secretion from the parathyroid glands. Another kind of stimulus is a neural stimulus. Here I see a nice cross-section of a spinal cord. Here is a nice motor neuron, right? And this is a sympathetic neuron, so what's not shown is that it's got to go through the sympathetic chain ganglia. This is part of your autonomic nervous system. It goes right into the inner part of the adrenal gland. What do we call the inner part of any kind of organ? The medulla, yeah, so here's the adrenal medulla, and it can sense those nerve impulses, and when those nerve impulses reach the end of this neuron, it will cause the secretion of adrenaline and noradrenaline, or epinephrine and norepinephrine. Those are important sympathetic chemicals that trigger a sympathetic response, right? And since it's an endocrine gland, where does it trigger a sympathetic response in your body? If the adrenal medulla is an endocrine gland, where does that hormone go? It goes in the bloodstream, then where does it go? Everywhere in your body, right? So here is an endocrine gland that produces a sympathetic response. Where in your body? all over the place, right, because it gets into the blood. All right, so that's an example when a nerve causes the release of a hormone. We call that neurostimulus. But there are many hormones that endocrine gland secretes because there is another hormone that is telling that endocrine gland to secrete something. And that's what we call hormonal. Some endocrine glands secrete a hormone because there's another hormone that's telling it to do so. So here is a pretty good example. Here's the hypothalamus. And this would be the optic chiasma right about here to give you guys a little bit of an orientation. Oh, I see maybe a little bit of a mammillary body. Here's the infundibulum or the stalk with, and that the pituitary gland sits right underneath it or it hangs off of the infundibulum. But there are hormones that are secreted by the hypothalamus. And then they go via the blood, right, because that's a hormone. It's got to travel by the blood. Travels by the blood to this distant location, but in this case, it's not too far away. It is the anterior pituitary, and the hormones from the hypothalamus tell the anterior pituitary to secrete other hormones. That's an example of hormonal stimulus. So there are various ways your body can control the secretion of a hormone. Could be due to a chemical, that's humoral. Could be due to an electrical stimulus, that would be neural, or it could be due to another hormone stimulus. That would be hormonal. Okay. I don't know. Anybody have any questions about that so far? Okay, this is just some nice general characteristics. Well, we just got done talking about the pituitary, so let's keep talking about the pituitary. How many major divisions does the pituitary gland have? I see it on this slide. It's not labeled, but you probably can see it really clearly. I see an anterior part and a posterior part. Not labeled, but you should know that this is the front part, here's the back part. And notice that this posterior part looks a lot like the brain. It has the same kind of color, right? The posterior pituitary. And as a matter of fact, the posterior pituitary is nervous tissue, right? And what about the color of the anterior pituitary? It's different from the posterior and different from the brain. And the anterior pituitary is glandular tissue, a different kind of tissue. All right, so anterior is glandular, posterior is nervous tissue. And here is that pituitary right within the sella turcica of the sphenoid bone. Or maybe you have to remember where that is. All right, so here I can see, again, the posterior and anterior lobe. The connection between the hypothalamus and the pituitary is what we call the infundibulum. Okay, the infundibulum or pituitary stalk. And the pituitary has some other regions. I'm not so concerned that you know all these other regions, right? But for sure you got to know anterior and posterior. Posterior is nervous tissue. That's why it's called the pars nervosa. And the anterior part is glandular tissue. Okay, so that's the pituitary gland. Okay, so here is how the anterior pituitary is controlled. There are neurons in the hypothalamus because the hypothalamus is really part of your brain, right? So it's nervous tissue. And when the hypothalamus receives information from all over your body, it can make a decision on what to do, and it can send electrical impulses down this axon to the axon terminus. And when a nerve impulse reaches the axon terminus, what usually happens with a neuron? What does it do? It secretes something into the synapse. Usually that's a neurotransmitter, right, if it's going to signal another neuron to do something. But in this particular case, that substance that's secreted by these neurons gets picked up by a capillary, right? And then that substance gets delivered wherever the blood goes. And so that's not really a neurotransmitter. That's really what we consider a hormone. All right, so here is a cell, a nerve cell that's secreting something, which is a neurotransmitter, but it goes into the blood, that's a hormone. So, my goodness, what is that? A neurotransmitter or a hormone? It's kind of confusing. So, you know what? Everybody gave up and said, well, we're going to call it a neurohormone. Okay? So, there are a number of places in your body where you can't really tell the difference between the nervous system and the endocrine system. They function together. They interface together. Here is a super example, right? The interface between the hypothalamus and the anterior pituitary gland. So these compounds released by the neurons of the hypothalamus are absorbed by the capillary. They move through a little tiny vein, and they go to another capillary where they move out into the anterior pituitary, and they cause the anterior pituitary to release some other hormones. So the hormones from the hypothalamus are called releasing hormones because they cause the release of hormones from the anterior pituitary. And I think that's all I need to say. When we get into the vascular system, I want to review this once again because this is a special kind of circulatory system where you have a capillary bed and then another blood vessel and then a second capillary bed. Usually in a circulatory system, you only have one capillary. You have an artery, a capillary, and a vein which takes blood back to the heart. You got an artery taking blood away from the heart, a capillary where exchange can take place, and then a vein bringing blood back to the heart. But here is a special one, right? There's two capillary beds back to back. This is what we call a portal system. Portal. We're going to look at a couple portal systems. All right, so let's take a look at some of these hormones that come from. We don't have a nice diagram of this. I guess it's on this slide right here. Thyroid stimulating hormone. All right, so the anterior pituitary releases a hormone called thyroid stimulating hormone. What organ in your body has receptors for thyroid stimulating hormone?
Thyroid.
The thyroid gland. Yeah, so the anterior pituitary can control the activity of the thyroid gland. Remember, that's in your neck. And the thyroid gland secretes another hormone called thyroxine. So here's an example of what? Hormonal regulation of the anterior pituitary. Follicle stimulating hormone. Does anybody know what part of your body has a follicle and is going to produce a sex cell? It's going to produce a female gamete, a female sex cell. A male sex cell is a sperm. What's a female sex cell? An egg. That's right. So follicle stimulating hormone will cause the maturation of an egg so that it can be fertilized. So follicle stimulating hormone helps in producing that cell. Then there's another hormone called luteinizing hormone. That's a hormone that's necessary to kick that mature oocyte or egg out of the ovary so that it can be fertilized. That's what we call luteinizing hormone. All right, then we got a couple others. Adrenal corticotropic hormone. What's the target tissue for adrenal corticotropic hormone? The adrenal gland. What part of the adrenal gland? Yeah, that's what that C stands for, the cortex. And the adrenal cortex secretes other kinds of hormones, which we haven't talked about yet, but the signal is ACTH from the anterior pituitary. All right. Well, these other two I don't think we're going to talk about, but you can read up on them. What I want to talk about are those releasing factors from the hypothalamus. All right, so TSH, FSH, LH, and ACTH are controlled by these hormones from the hypothalamus. And it's not really hard to know what those things are called. All right, so we have neurons that release a hormone that go to the anterior pituitary, cause the release of thyroid stimulating hormone. And the name of that hormone from the hypothalamus is called TSHRH, releasing hormone. Right. So TSH- releasing hormone. Sometimes maybe it's called a releasing factor. That can be the same thing. So TSHRH will cause the release of TSH from the anterior pituitary. All right, what about ACTH from the anterior pituitary? What's the hormone that causes the release of adrenal corticotropic hormone? That is going to be ACTH-RH. All right, and where do all these RHs come from? The hypothalamus. The hypothalamus. All right, so you could apply that nomenclature to all of these hormones. Growth hormone works all over the body. Prolactin is a hormone that's necessary for the production of milk from a breast. All right, so let's look at some of these. Growth hormone stimulates body growth. Of course, that's very important for a developing individual before puberty. Thyroid stimulating hormone causes the thyroid gland to secrete hormones. ACTH stimulates the adrenal cortex to secrete hormones that help you cope with stress, like cortisol, steroid hormones, and also other hormones that regulate glucose concentration by increasing glucose. And follicle-stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone work with the reproductive system, both in the male and female. They have an effect on ovaries and testes. Ovaries and testes are what we call gonads. And so FSH and LH are what we call gonadotropins. Tropin is a hormone that stimulates a gland to grow and also to secrete. Okay, and here's what I just talked about, releasing factors. The anterior pituitary is controlled by releasing factors from the hypothalamus. And you can just use the same name of the hormone from the anterior pituitary, but just put RH after it for releasing hormone. The posterior pituitary is a little bit simpler. Okay, and remember we said it's nervous tissue? Well, here are some nuclei in the hypothalamus. What's a nucleus again in the central nervous system? A nucleus is different than a tract. Yeah, nerve cell bodies and dendrites. Nucleus is gray matter. Right, so here's a bunch of what? Nerve cell bodies and dendrites. Then they send axons down through the infundibulum, and these axons go all the way to the posterior pituitary. So there are nerve impulses that originate in the hypothalamus, travel down through the infundibulum. When they get to this axon terminus, they secrete what is usually secreted from a neuron? A neurotransmitter, okay? But in this particular case, that compound is picked up by this capillary distributed by the blood everywhere. What kind of substance is that that gets picked up by the blood and distributed everywhere? A hormone. So again, these compounds are what we want to call neurohormones because they come from a neuron, but they still have an action at some distant location in our body. Right? They still have a target tissue. And you can see that this is nervous tissue. There are only two hormones that are secreted by the posterior pituitary. One is called oxytocin, and the other is called antidiuretic hormone. Antidiuretic, and from now on, we're just going to say ADH. So what the heck is the action of ADH? Well, what's the action of a diuretic? What does a diuretic do? Yeah, it produces a lot of urine, right? Makes you pee, makes you lose water. Antidiuretic hormone will do what? The opposite of that, right? So that will decrease the amount of urine that you produce so that you retain water. That's its main job, so that you don't dehydrate. Oxytocin is a little bit different. Oxytocin is very excitatory on smooth muscle. Some kinds of smooth muscle causes smooth muscle to contract. And in particular, some smooth muscle of the uterus, oxytocin causes contraction of the uterus. And why might that be a good thing sometimes? Yeah, for childbirth, okay? And also for menstruation, right? There's contraction of the uterus. So oxytocin is important for uterine contractions, but also for the glandular tissue of the breast. When oxytocin is presented to a breast that is mature, that has built itself so that it can actually produce milk, this oxytocin will cause the secretion of milk. So we call that the milk letdown reflex. Oxytocin won't promote the production of milk, but just release of milk from the breast. That is oxytocin. The hormone that's responsible for a breast to mature, so it's competent to produce milk, is called prolactin. So prolactin and oxytocin work together. First prolactin during pregnancy is released so that breasts develop, they become competent so they can produce milk, but that milk will stay in the breast unless it gets a signal, and that signal is oxytocin. Yeah, oxytocin. That's part of an important neuroendocrine reflex. So I suppose probably many of you could figure out what's the stimulus for release of oxytocin. What's the stimulus for? And remember, oxytocin is released from these neurons right here, so it's a neuroendocrine reflex. What might be a good time for the breast to release milk, to secrete milk? When there's a baby nursing on a breast, right? So it's just tactile information, and that tactile information, of course, is picked up by part of the nervous system, taken to the brain, and then these nerves in the hypothalamus say, oh, okay, we have a nursing infant. Let's secrete some milk, and the posterior pituitary then releases oxytocin, and that produces milk secretion. And that's kind of interesting, because what happens to suckling of an infant when there is milk presented to it on a breast? Does it fall asleep, or does it get more interested? It gets much more interested and suckles more. That increases the tactile stimulus, right? And guess what happens to oxytocin concentration when an infant becomes more interested in nursing? Yeah, more oxytocin is produced, right? Which produces more milk letdown reflex, which stimulates the infant even more to nurse, which causes more oxytocin release, which causes more milk to be secreted from the breast. So we call that a positive feedback mechanism. They're very rare, right? Because if that mechanism were to continue forever, then the whole universe would be filled up with breast milk. Well, obviously that doesn't happen, right? So that neuroendocrine reflex, right, stops when the breast runs out of milk. And when the breast runs out of milk, it won't secrete any milk anymore. So what happens to the interest of the infant? It kind of loses interest, stops suckling, right, then oxytocin concentrations go down and everybody takes a nap. Okay, so oxytocin, important for milk letdown reflex from the posterior pituitary gland. Okay, let's look at the thyroid gland. Here's thyroid gland, located in the anterior neck. It's got a bunch of these things. These are follicles as well, these circular structures made up of different cells. And it produces a couple hormones. These hormones are kind of special because they need a special element attached to them before they have activity. And that special little element is an iodine atom. All right, so thyroid hormone needs an iodine atom. And in order to be a competent thyroid hormone, right, it has to have either 3 or 4 of those iodine molecules attached to it, or atoms attached to it. So sometimes if it has 3, we call it T3. If it has 4, we call it T4. Right? And that's a really nice abbreviation because T3 actually means triiodothreonine, and T4 means tetraiodothreonine. You don't have to know that. And as you can see, it's just much too complicated to say that. So T3 and T4. The active form of thyroid hormone is T3. And T4 can be converted into T3, but the thyroid gland makes both of these things. These things help regulate basal metabolic rate, and also they're important for growth in a developing nervous system. The thyroid gland, remember we talked about the parathyroids on the posterior side of the thyroid gland? Well, that were involved in calcium regulation of blood calcium concentration. Well, even within the thyroid gland, right, it secretes another hormone called calcitonin. That's different than parathyroid hormone. Right? Parathyroid hormone causes the breakdown of bone so that calcium goes into blood. Parathyroid hormone increases blood calcium levels. Calcitonin is antagonistic to that. It decreases calcium blood concentration. So what's the relationship between calcitonin and parathyroid hormone? And why is that a beautiful thing? They're antagonistic to each other, right? And you know calcium is so important for muscle contraction, synaptic transmission. It's really important to have precise control and balance all right, of calcium levels, just as important as glucose. Okay, now here are the parathyroid glands that we talked about.
Indeed.
So, for instance, if your blood calcium starts to decrease below some normal range, right, then parathyroid glands will monitor that and release parathyroid hormone, and that will cause release of calcium from bones into the blood. Right, so what was the initial stimulus on these parathyroid glands? It was a decrease in blood calcium. So the stimulus was a decrease in blood calcium. And so parathyroid hormone is released. And what's the response to parathyroid hormone? It increases. All right, and so these two effects, do they add together or do they subtract from each other? The stimulus and response, do they add or do they subtract from each other? One causes a decrease, the other causes an increase. What do? They cancel each other out. That's a subtraction, and that's what we call a negative feedback mechanism, a negative feedback. That's exactly the opposite compared to that oxytocin scenario that we just talked about, where oxytocin is secreted, and that produces what? Milk secretion from the breast, and what does that relate to? How does that affect the hypothalamus? Increase oxytocin, which what does what? Increase release of milk, which increases oxytocin, which increases secretion of milk. That's what we call a positive feedback mechanism, because these things add together. The stimulus and response add together, they don't subtract. And there's very few of those kinds of normal positive feedback mechanisms in our body, but the milk letdown reflex is one of them. Okay, we talked about the adrenal medulla already, right? It secretes epinephrine and norepinephrine. These are sympathetic stimulators all over the body, right? The adrenal cortex, right, is that superficial part of the adrenal gland. Okay. All right, so here's the adrenal cortex, and it's got some different layers. I'm not going to ask you to know the different layers, but you should know at least two classes of hormones that come from the adrenal cortex. And what do I have for you here? Two endocrine glands and one. Okay, that's not so important. Oh, here. Down over here, adrenal cortex. Okay, the two classes of hormones are mineralocorticoids and glucocorticoids. Anytime you hear this word corticoid, you should think of a steroid type hormone, and the precursor molecule is cholesterol. Cholesterol is a fat or a lipid. A glucocorticoid helps regulate certain kind of metabolism in your body, and you could probably tell me, what kind of metabolism is it going to help regulate? Glucose, yeah. So this could be involved with diabetes mellitus, for instance, when somebody's blood glucose is too high. Right, a glucocorticoid. And another class will be a mineralocorticoid, right? It doesn't help regulate glucose metabolism, but it helps regulate various minerals in your body, and some minerals will be sodium and potassium. So it helps regulate sodium and potassium levels. So those are the two classes of hormones. And probably you should know a name of one of those. Aldosterone is a mineralocorticoid, and cortisol is a glucocorticoid. Maybe I'll say some more after that question. Yeah.
Is the reason the fight or fight response that's released by the adrenal gland so quick because it's right on top of the kidney, so it's like going basically right into the bloodstream right away?
You know what? It does have a pretty fast response, probably faster than you would recognize, but it is still slow compared to the nervous system, compared to sympathetic nerves, because nerve impulses can go at hundreds of miles an hour from your spinal cord to a sympathetic organ, like maybe your heart. The sympathetic nervous system goes to your heart. So that nerve will send impulses very fast to the heart, hundreds of miles an hour, which is super fast, but norepinephrine and epinephrine from the adrenal gland is still going to take seconds to get there. Okay, so there's a big difference between, right, the speed of 100 miles an hour or the speed of, I don't know, centimeters per second. There's a big difference. Pineal gland. Who knows where that pineal gland is? That's part of the brain. Let's see if I can find pineal gland. So here is brain. Here's pituitary, right? Anterior, posterior. And here is the pineal gland, way over here, part of the central nervous system. All right, pineal gland, sometimes they call it the epithalamus. And maybe you remember that the thalamus is part of the diencephalon. And so the pineal gland is part of the diencephalon as well. It's kind of shaped like a pine cone. And it secretes a hormone called melatonin. And we're not exactly sure what melatonin does, but it has to do with regulating or timing certain events in somebody's body, right? So it might help regulate circadian rhythms, and these just regulate when you fall asleep and when you wake up, so that when you wake up, you're active and aroused, and when you're fatigued, you fall asleep, right? So melatonin might produce help produce a sleep state in somebody. Melatonin, since it's involved with timing, might help regulate the timing of adolescence or puberty, right? And so it might help determine when somebody enters a reproductive stage in their life. That could be possibly one of these. All right, the pancreas. All right, we talked a little bit. It's got an exocrine part and an endocrine part. The exocrine part secretes digestive enzymes into your digestive tract. And the endocrine part secretes two hormones. And here are the two hormones. There's insulin and glucagon. So probably just memorize, insulin does what to blood glucose concentration? It decreases, right? And glucagon is going to be the opposite of that because it's antagonistic. Right, and through the result of these, working through negative feedback mechanisms, right, if blood glucose increases in a normal individual, what hormone is secreted if blood glucose increases? Okay, what's going to be secreted is insulin. Insulin does what to blood glucose? Decreases. The initial stimulus was what? Increase. The response was decrease. And what do? Do they add together or do they subtract? They subtract from each other. That produces, right, nice precise control of glucose concentration in the blood through that negative feedback mechanism. Right, there's two different kinds of cells that can monitor glucose in the blood, and one secretes glucagon, that's called an alpha cell. The one that secretes insulin is the beta cell. Right, and if there is an infection that attacks these beta cells and maybe kills a whole bunch of them in the pancreas, could be a viral infection or some other kind of process, what happens to that individual if they can't secrete insulin? What happens to blood sugar? It stays high. Yeah, that's what we call diabetes mellitus, right? That's one possible cause for diabetes mellitus, right? Is there damage to these beta cells within the pancreas? And if that's the reason, then that diabetic condition is sort of easily treated with just insulin shots. That might not seem very easy for some people, but that's actually a lot easier than other kinds of diabetes. Okay, so it lowers blood sugar. Thymus gland, I don't want you to know too much about the thymus gland, but it helps certain kinds of immune cells mature so that they can fight infection. And that was a lymphocyte. A lymphocyte fights infection. So certain kinds of lymphocytes end up in the thymus, and there they mature and they become competent to fight infection. And since they go to the thymus, then we call them T lymphocytes. A T lymphocyte can fight infection. There are other kinds of lymphocytes that fight infection, but T lymphocytes come from the thymus. All right, and gonads. Give me a couple examples of gonads. Testes and ovaries. That's right. All right, so the gonads are the main sources of sex steroid hormones. And a sex steroid would be like testosterone from a male and estrogen and progesterone from a female. All right, so the gonads produce these two different steroid hormones. And These hormones help regulate reproductive behavior, but they also help produce secondary sex characteristics like breast development, penis development, scrotum development. What are some other, what else makes boys different than girls?
Deeper voice.
Deeper voice, that's right. More muscle, bigger bones, right? Those are secondary sex characteristics. And the reason why somebody's voice, a male's voice is deeper is because the part of their body that actually makes sound is larger, right? That's called the larynx right here. And if you were to look at a male's neck, you'd see a large larynx. Female neck, it would be a more diminutive larynx. And remember, as something gets bigger, it likes to vibrate at a lower frequency. If something is thinner and smaller, it likes to vibrate at a higher frequency, right? So that's why female voices typically are higher in pitch compared to males. And these hormones, estrogen and testosterone, also stimulate the production of gametes. Like it helps the production of sperm or helps the production of oocytes or eggs in the female. So it has an anatomical effect as well as, okay, that physiological effect of producing either eggs or sperm. And those are sex steroid hormones. Okay, and we're going to talk more about those hormones in that last chapter when we get into the endocrine system. Let me see if there's anything else that I want to say. That's pretty much it. Except here is an interesting condition. Do I have it here for you to see? Right here. Okay, what endocrine gland did we talk about that is located in the anterior neck? Okay, maybe we talked about a couple, but the biggest one was the thyroid gland. All right, so when I look at this person right here, do you see this big bulge on their neck? Okay, and this has to do with these positive and negative feedback mechanisms. And what's the hormone that the thyroid gland produces once again? Thyroid hormone, right, or thyroxine or T3, T4, and in order for it to be a T3 or T4, what does that molecule have to have on it?
Iodine.
An iodine molecule, right? So the thyroid gland has to have iodine to make thyroid hormone. And can you remember the name of the gland that controls the thyroid hormone? We're going to work backwards a little bit. There's a gland that controls the thyroid gland because it secretes thyroid stimulating hormone. Remember what secretes thyroid stimulating hormone? It's called the anterior pituitary, right? And the anterior pituitary is actually controlled by another gland. We're going to go all the way up to the very top. And that's called the hypothalamus, right? The hypothalamus secretes thyroid stimulating hormone, releasing hormone, which goes to the anterior pituitary, which causes the release of thyroid-stimulating hormone, which goes to the thyroid gland, and it does two things. It causes the thyroid gland to grow, but it causes the thyroid gland to secrete T3 or T4, thyroid hormone. Okay, so what's happening right here? We see that the thyroid gland is getting really big, right? It's growing way out of proportion, and so it's getting information from where to grow. It's getting information from it could be a couple of places, but most directly it is from the anterior pituitary. Anterior pituitary is secreting thyroid-stimulating hormone, causing the thyroid gland to grow. And what's the job of the thyroid gland? To secrete thyroid hormone or thyroxine. But in order for that to work, it's got to have iodine. If it doesn't have iodine, then it can't secrete thyroid hormone. So what does the anterior pituitary think? It thinks that the thyroid gland is not doing its job, right? But it would like to, but it just doesn't have any iodine, so it can. So what do you think the anterior pituitary does if it thinks that the thyroid gland is not doing its job? It's going to stimulate the thyroid gland by releasing what? Thyroid-stimulating hormone. That thyroid-stimulating hormone will cause the thyroid gland to grow. We call that hypertrophy, right? And also secrete thyroid hormone. But if it doesn't have iodine, it can't secrete thyroid hormone. And so what does the anterior pituitary now think? Thyroid gland is still not doing its job. I better stimulate it some more. So what is the anterior pituitary going to release? More thyroid-stimulating hormone. It goes to the thyroid gland, and it gets bigger, but it still can't secrete thyroid hormone because it doesn't have iodine, right? And so that process goes round and round and round. The thyroid gland gets really big, but it still can't produce thyroid hormone because there's no iodine in this person's diet. And this condition is what we call goiter, right? A goiter is when a thyroid gland is overstimulated from the anterior pituitary because the body is lacking iodine. And this is really obvious on most people. It's kind of rare to see because it's so easily treated. All you have to do is give somebody some iodine. And here in the United States, it's almost impossible not to have proper levels of iodine in your body because where do you eat it all the time? Yeah, salt is, right, is laced with iodine at the proper concentration. And when you eat iodinated salt, what condition does that prevent? What condition does that prevent? Goiter. Yeah, goiter. The other thing that it prevents, right, thyroid hormone is necessary for basal metabolic rate and also development of the nervous system. So people, when they're very young and they don't have iodine in their diet, right, they can also suffer from mental retardation. The nervous system doesn't grow properly. And this is sort of interesting. There is a food that's probably the most common food staple in the world. Can anybody think of something that almost everybody in the world eats, and in some parts of the world, it's like almost the only thing they have? And that is, yeah, fish if you're around water, that would be good. But sometimes if you're not around a lake or an ocean or something, you don't have fish, you can still grow rice. All right, so rice is, and that's a nice starch, right? But rice has no iodine in it whatsoever. So there are some parts of the world where this condition, that mental retardation, happens just because there isn't iodine in the population. And that's really kind of a terrible thing when that happens. So that's one thing that people are trying to develop, are genetically modified rices that can incorporate more nutritious, balanced nutrition for people that grow that kind of rice plant. What happens if this condition is not treated? Well, this goiter will just get bigger and bigger and bigger. This person's nervous system is not going to develop. They'll get very sedentary. They'll probably become obese. And I don't know what the longevity necessarily is. It's just pretty uncommon these days, at least in the United States. Now, where you might see goiter, I think I've seen goiter at LAX airport, right, around the international terminal. Somebody comes from a country way far away where there really isn't good modern medicine, you might see somebody with a goiter. Okay. All right, so that is the endocrine system. So next time, please bring a picture ID, a pencil, a good eraser, and a Scantron. But please don't forget your picture ID.